Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Following on County Cricketer. It's week three of the County Championship, or at least it's just gone past. And myself, John Norman from Talk Sport, Nick Friend and George DeBell from The Cricketer, and Steve Harmison are back together again to look back at the runners and the riders from another eventful week of four-day Red Bull cricket. Every week throughout the summer, this is the place to be, whether it's on podcast, on the following on feed, whether it's on TalkSport 2 or on YouTube, on cricketer.com or on Steve Harmison's YouTube channel. We will be discussing all the action in the only dedicated county cricket show across all three broadcast mediums to be winging its way to you every single week. We'd also like you to get involved. We have had loads of questions, which we will seek to answer today. But get your questions in either on YouTube or on Twitter. But for now, it's time to get on with the show. Thanks for watching or listening to Following On County Cricketer. Well, here we are again, week three of the County Championship. Good to look back at all the action alongside George DeBell, Nick Friend and Steve Harmison. All four of us were at cricket between Thursday and Sunday. Not all of us, though, Harmy, were at county cricket. How did the boy do? In fact, I think you might have been to see the game of the weekend.
I did, yeah. Seeing an absolute epic 115, played 116 for 9 at Rock in the middle of the Northumberland countryside. It was absolutely freezing. I must admit, the missus was very, very cold when she was wrapped up in blankets in a big coat, but yeah, Charlie did all right. He had two wickets and then he missed a strike one. A bit like how Dad's career normally went. Got wickets, but tended to miss strike ones as well.
And what about you, Nick, at London's premier cricket ground to see? Well, I tell you what, I think that was a good win for Surrey, considering Sam Curran could only bowl 15 overs. They had injury concerns to the bowlers and their wicketkeeper at one point in second innings. First innings deficit as well. And Somerset looked to be safe, 160-odd ahead, just two wickets down. But Surrey conjured up a win.
No, it was good. I thought it was a very good game of cricket, actually, between two good teams, a lot of England hopefuls, a lot of guys who played international cricket, a couple of very good experienced overseas players on each team as well. With the odd bit of drama, wasn't there? Ben Folkes' injury on the third evening. Sam Curran didn't even bowl the 15 overs he was allowed to bowl in the game. I think he ended up bowling 10 and batting twice and looking sort of pretty fluent and pretty, I guess, sort of Sam Curran-ish. So, you know, hit the second ball after tee for six on the final day. Went after Jack Leach a bit. Well, I guess quite interestingly, I think. Almost you've got all those sort of established stars on show. And then Ryan Patel is the man who sort of breaks the game open on the final day, as he really has done, to be fair, since, I think, sort of three quarters of the way through last summer when he got that breakthrough ton, the Royal London Cup, and has sort of become this top-order dasher out of nowhere, having previously, I think by his own admission, been a bit of a sort of a Red Bull blocker. He really broke the game wide open, actually, when he looked at the scorecard and saw how Burns and Amler and Pope and Ben Folkes, who played very nicely, went, actually. It sort of highlighted how well he'd played in sort of churning out a ton and 130-odd balls. And, yeah, I think sort of making that chase look a lot easier than it was on the final day.
If you're following the show on the Following On podcast or listening on TalkSport 2, we've had a couple of images flashing up of Harmy's at up north, basically, watching cricket. And, George, you sent us a photo as well. I mean, it looks like someone's essentially offended a very close family member. You don't look at all happy. But I know that it's just for the camera, because you're very rarely happier than when you're at a cricket ground, and you're at a cricket ground a lot of the time. So what did you pick up? What action did you see this week?
I saw Essex go into Warwickshire. So the most recent winners of the county championships over recent seasons against each other, and Warwickshire won by 10 wickets. It was actually quite a good game, and I think Essex look fine. I think they will be fine. They lost it in the first innings. Another fantastic innings from Michael Burgess. I mean, if you're picking on form, no one is suggesting he should be playing for England right now, but wow. And Ollie Hannan-Dolby as well bowled really brilliantly, and we had lots of long discussions about the wobble seam. It's not completely new, obviously, but it is revolutionising cricket. I honestly think we're going to look back in 100 years and think that it, like DRS, has become... So many of the innovations in cricket are benefit batters, don't they? But this one really does seem to be benefiting bowlers. And never more apparent than when Ollie Hannan-Dolby is making use of it on a pretty flat wicket, really. And another little observation, that Edgbaston wicket, it's a good test wicket. If Virat Kohli's going to break that 100 duck anywhere, that's where you should put a bet on there. Virat Kohli to get 100 in the Edgbaston test.
Brilliant. It's that kind of insight, you see, that you come to the show for. And I was at the Oval, of course. I was there on Thursday and Friday. And I set the team a task to take a photo while they're at the grounds. Harmy and George nailed it. Nick, very disappointed. You know, no excuses. You were there. I saw you. Still no photo. But look, that's fine. Maybe you're a podcast and radio
you
show.
You were my proof of my presence. Well, seeing me was proof that I was there. I was also at Canterbury on Thursday. There was a photo of me at Canterbury that granted did not end up in your possession.
But, there you go. I did take a photo though. And essentially, I popped over to the pavilion. I am a member, so I was managed to get in. Your ECB pass can't get you in the pavilion. And essentially, I stumbled upon this photo that was on the wall. It was of a Surrey team from 1887. And what interested me was that one of the players was resolutely refusing to look at the camera when the photo was taking place. It looked like he was having a proper sulk on. So I took the photo and I sent it to you guys. And then a couple of days later, I thought, well, I'd probably better find out who this guy is. And as these things very often work out, if I was to say to you, well, first off, do you know who he was? You saw the photo, but I didn't pick out the player and I didn't give you the reasoning. But do you have any idea who Henry Wood is?
No idea. I'll ask Alex Stewart. Was Alex Stewart not on that photograph?
No, it's only 100 years before, 1887. Nick?
No, I was just admiring the sideburns.
Well, Henry Wood, statistically, is the most successful England batsman of all time. I know. And I had to check it. But if you remove any criteria, and I can see George heading to Cricket Info Stats right now, if you put in highest batting average for any England men's batter in the history of Test cricket, there's your man, Henry Wood. And he's also the first wicketkeeper batsman to score a century in Test cricket. So there you go. And
that fantastically modern start to the show with a story, breaking story from the 1880s. Terrific.
I can't believe it. I've been waiting for 4 days to tell you this story, and I'm so pleased that at least I was excited anyway. Well, anyway, that won't be the top line and it won't be moment of the week, but shall we start the show, guys?
The top line.
Where shall we start? George, we've got to be honest. It wasn't a stellar week of county cricket in terms of, you know, heart racing and pulsating close finishes, is it? Because most of the games are over by day four.
I can't remember a round like it, though. I think there were five innings victories, or defeats, and one by 10 wickets, which is pretty incredible. I still think... Look, what I saw was kind of compelling, and it was quite high quality as well, because some of those sides that won, Nottinghamshire being a good example, were sort of bouncing back after a rough week previously. So it seemed quite... Hampshire as well had been a really good example, wouldn't they? So, I don't know. There was still a certain entertainment value, and as I say, the quality of cricket that I saw was high.
Yeah, absolutely. And Shan Masood, Nick, he's just spoken to Harmy, actually. That will be going out in the Cricket Collective. In fact, it would have already gone out in the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and on the following podcast. But yeah, Shan Masood just continuing his ridiculous run of form.
He would, I mean, yeah. no more needs to be said. I think people expect him to have a very good Division 2 season. He's obviously a very good player. I think a lot of his career sort of found its way back to England, hasn't he? He was at sixth form in the UK at Stanford College. Might have that wrong. Was at Durham University, the MCCU system. Obviously played for Pakistan over here. I think he grew up just down the road from Lords as well. So I guess it was probably always fitting that he'd come back here and score a bucket load of runs. But perhaps not that Ambry thought he would score in the first fortnight of the season. But I mean, his biggest barrier to 1,000 runs before the end of May might just be batting first. Might be the fact that he makes too many batting first and doesn't get another go, and they win by an innings, and suddenly six, seven innings left before June becomes two or three. But at this rate, he's on to break all sorts of records, isn't he? I mean, I think Mickey Arthur and Derby have been delighted with the three pitches they've played on as well so far. So, and it was good for them, I guess, to get some actual reward and win the game as well, rather than the, sort of the two draws they've been involved in before then.
My top line is Surrey's win. I know I'm biased, but at the end of the day, they lost the toss. Somerset were 300 on the board first innings. They were leading by 160 with two wickets down. Surrey were two bowlers down in the second innings, and they won the game. And that's a pretty impressive start to the season for them, top of the league. What about you, Harmy? What was the top line from week three of the county championship as far as you can see?
Yeah, I think Bohannon, 231. And an excellent win from, I mentioned him last week, going to bat at number three, taking responsibility. And it's a tough place to go and bat. So if he wants to play for England, go and bat where it's toughest. And he's shown so far this season. He's in the runs. Yeah, Masood was, again, just carried on where he left off. Interesting, when he talked to me and Neil Manthorpe in the Cricket Collective, he said he lost his sister. His sister sadly passed away not long ago. And his outlook on the game is it's just a game. Has really sort of refocused his priorities in life, and he was brilliant on interview, and again as good as he's played. The other one is Patterson White. There's a lot of talk about 2nd of June, who is going to be our spinner. Well, Parkinson and Patterson White are putting their hand up to say to Jack Leach, "I'm coming for your place." And he got a 5-4 at Durham, which is no mean feat at the Riverside. It's not one where spinners get too many wickets. You got 7 in the match, so watch out for that young man. Whether he's in contention for England or not, they would be my sort of top lines.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, you mentioned a couple of the moments, and there were plenty of moments, despite the one-sided fair. So let's get on with moments of the week.
Moments of the week.
Okay, well, fair's fair after Lord Inglemorgan's heroic victory against Nottinghamshire last week, and I was pied a little bit. I did notice they went down against Middlesex, so that'd be one of my moments of the week. But really, my other moment of the week would be a century for George Hill, 21-year-old all-rounder at Yorkshire, and weighing in with the runs, and I think he took a wicket in the second innings as well. So there's a couple of moments for you. I won't mention Ryan Patel, because Nick's already done so. He always talks about Surrey. But what about you other guys? I'll start with you, Nick. Actually, I just mentioned you. What are the moments of the week?
I think within that Middlesex win, you obviously didn't mention Shaheen, who...
Oh, yeah, another Middlesex local.
I think he is... I'm really interested by Middlesex this season because their bowling attack is so well stocked, especially with Shaheen. And, I mean, they had a lot of problems last year, but none of them were with their bowlers. I mean... But what was interesting last year is they had the best bowling attack, they're the best bowling average in the country against right-handers, and I think the second worst in the country against left-handers. And I think part of the reason for bringing Shaheen in was having a left-armer who would effectively run up at 90 mile an hour and bowl at the stumps of left-handers. And to bowl Glamorgan twice out cheaply without Murta, without Bamber, who I think that was 110 wickets between them last year, was significant for that reason. But also I think the return of Richard Johnson linking up with Toby Rowland-Jones, who played for England when Johnson was his bowling coach for Middlesex beforehand, and likewise Tom Helm, who played for England Lions when Rich Johnson was his bowling coach beforehand. They both start the season brilliantly. I think Helm, I think, has now taken more wickets this season than he probably has done in his last two or three, or possibly four Red Bull seasons combined, whereas Roland Jones took 8 wickets in the match and got 60-odd with the bat. Between that quintet, I guess, that'd be as good an attack as any in Division 2. And if you add Tino Malawalita's UK citizenship going through, that now gives them his option with his left-arm spin, and Luke Holman, who's the young leg spinner as well. They're very well-balanced, well-balanced attack. And if you add Mark Stoneman's runs with Sam Robson's runs, suddenly they look a pretty formidable team in that division. And obviously Pete Hanscom's back as well. If he can follow up what he did in the Shield this winter rather than what he did in the Championship last year, which was not all that much.
Yeah, absolutely. George, you had a bit of a concussion sub-drama.
Liam Norwell took a real crashing blow to the head while batting, and he's going to miss this week's game as a consequence, which is a shame. I think they think he's okay, but I think the protocol is you have to be okay for 7 days before returning. So Oliver Hannon-Dolby came in and, as ever, blocked the hell out of it with Burgess at the other end, which meant that had either of them been out, the Warwickshire innings would have been over. So Craig Miles was called up as the concussion sub, but he'd gone home. He lives in Alverchurch or somewhere, so he was about half an hour away. So they were getting regular updates on his journey as he drove to the ground. They were like, he's at the lights, on the whatever road, Ulster Road. And, there was this odd period where they were blocking it. And Burgess is obviously smashing it at the moment. I think he's hit 13 sixes in 2 innings so far this season. So it was a really odd passage of play. And then he arrived, and I don't know what they put on for the last wicket. 64, off the top of my head, I think it was. And Burgess went on to make another 100. And it was such a crucial stand because you could really see the Essex heads drop, because they batted very poorly in their first innings, but they clawed their way back into the game. And sometimes those stands are what become the tipping point. And so it really did feel quite important, and it put Warwickshire out of reach. And you look at the whole season, Essex-Warwickshire, that is one of those sort of barometer games, potentially. It's early days, but, that's a big win.
Did he arrive in his whites? I don't know.
I mean, he was driving, so I don't imagine there was a lot of scope for changing as he arrived. So no, I don't suppose he did. I'm a bit surprised they'd let him go home, to be honest. But he'd just done a stint on the radio, and they'd said off you go. But anyway, he did. He got there just in the nick of time.
Harmy, what about you? Unless you've got some tales from playing where you had to dash to the ground, I imagine.
There was one game where I dashed to the ground after I got brought into the squad for the Lord's Test match against Australia. Not going to play, but managed to keep it quiet from Notts, because Durham were playing Notts, and word had got back to me that if I was going to play in the Test match, Notts were going to play on a certain pitch, have a little bit more in it. And if I didn't play in a Test match, they were going to play on this flat pitch, which actually it riled me up a little bit more. So I get left out of the Test match after half 10. Strousey picks a team, I'm not in it. I've raced up to Trent Bridge, got there by lunchtime, and I think I had 6 foot by the end of the day bowling on this flat pitch, which still generated a bit of pace. Durham won, we won comfortably. So it's probably the only time I've had to dash somewhere. I was literally, the night before the play, the lads at Durham were telling me that we literally got we're going to play on potentially two different pitches here. One if you're playing and one if you're not, which I thought that was a bit respectful towards myself, but it rattled me up a little bit more that they decided to play me on the flat one. So that's the only sort of pitch thing that got me. Actually, I've got my moments were a couple of nice gestures by players, because we've talked about how good individuals have been. Hassan Ali gave a young kid the stump that he managed to, I think he broke middle stump. And a young kid got a nice souvenir. And Peter Siddle, again, great ambassadors for our game. Give the 5-wicket ball to a young Surrey fan, signed. So little things like that are great gestures from the players who are role models as well, which is great to see. And it's great to see young kids in watching first-class cricket. But we can't get away from this. The shocker. That umpiring decision. I'm sorry. Was it at Canterbury? I think he gave young Cox out. Caught bat pad, and I think he's had his hands in, he nearly had his hands in his back pockets, never mind anything else. So I'm sorry to the umpire, I have to call you out on this. That was an absolute shocker.
He gets given on Ben Brown's appeal, doesn't it? Short leg and leg slip hardly appeal. There's just nothing coming.
I'm not surprised they didn't appeal. Oh my word. It was Cox's body language and Darren Stevens at the non-striker's end.
The headbound, the great headbound.
Amazement towards the umpire. It was like, and that partnership, what was that partnership? That partnership was, I think it was about 40-odd. And it was holding the game up, but it was holding Hampshire up. And when Darren Stevens' look, when the finger went up in the air, was just priceless. Even though he had his helmet on, you could just see the look in his face was just, that was a shock.
Can I just check, was it Rob Bailey, the umpire?
I thought it was Rob Bailey, because I sort of semi-recognised that.
Well, we'd better be careful. We'd better be careful to check or not say that then, hadn't we? But he's actually quite a good umpire. I don't know, I guess we've all, we all make these inexplicable mistakes. Like driving into a post or something like that.
Well, didn't Rob Bailey's Test career come to an end because of an equally horrendous umpiring decision?
Yes. Yes, he was caught off the thigh pad down the leg side at the second or third appeal.
Yeah, Viv Richards ran down the wicket and just kept going and going until the umpire went, oh, OK, I'll give it out.
That is pretty much right, yeah.
I'm still annoyed about that. 32 years later. I tell you what, just one final thing as well. It would be really interesting if England were playing Pakistan, and it's a rare summer that they're not, to be honest. Obviously, they're going there at the end of the year, but so many Pakistani players in rich form over the last 3 weeks. But let's head over now. Let's cross to Race to Lords.
Race to Lords.
Okay, Race to Lords. I mean, this list is getting longer and longer, which I suppose is healthy. But let's go through some of the players. I'm going to have to change it around so I don't start with Surrey players every week. But basically, there's a lot of them. Rory Burns, unfortunately, has continued where he left off. Nothing scores, really, 12 and 17. Ollie Pope's average is now below 100 at the Oval, 47 and 5. Ben Foulkes is doing everything that needs to be done. He's taking catches and he's scoring runs, 63 and 48 not out. And Sam Curran, you mentioned Nick earlier, smashed it around, really, 80 and 33, not for 21. Sam Robson, someone you've been keeping your eye on, Nick, he scored 21. Alex Leese is injured, so hasn't played. James Bracey, I tell you what, you must have been slumped on the desk at the Oval press box, Nick, when news came
Canterbury,
through.
Canterbury, I think, that day.
Oh, is it Canterbury?
I was watching Ben Compton at the time, actually.
Wow.
The man who never stops batting.
I know. Harmy said last week, if Bracey scores a century against Mahmood, Parkinson and Anderson, then that's something to really get excited about. But unfortunately, he made 5 and 14. Dom Bess and Adam Lyth. Adam Lyth, 2 and 53. Bowled a little bit as well. Dom Bess, 2 for 31, 1 for 48. Darvin Milan, though, 2 half centuries. You feel his time might have gone, though. 64 and 75. Jack Leach didn't take a wicket, did bowl, 0 for 25 and 0 for 33. Parkinson, 1 for 36 and 3 for 79. I asked a question a couple of weeks ago about Josh Bohannon. Should he be in the Race to Lords? And you all were very quick to say, yes, he should. 231. Zach Rawley's indifferent start to the season continues. 7 and 29. Dan Lawrence, 30 and 44. Sibley scored a few runs. 33 and 41, not out as Warwickshire beat Essex. Craig Overton coming up against his brother, 2 for 83 and 1 for 58. James Vince, 111. And Anderson, 0 for 30, 2 for 25. Mahmood, 2 for 44 and 2 for 46. Anybody in that list, George, that really stands out?
Yeah, I think Matt Parkinson's season couldn't be going any better, could it? Partly because he's bowling well and taking wickets, and partly because his rivals aren't having the same opportunities. I saw there was some criticism of Tom Abel for not bowling Jack Leach a huge amount, and he had played in the previous game at Taunton and not bowled at all. But I noticed in the same game, Surrey didn't pick their specialist spinners. So, you know, sometimes the conditions don't necessarily suit. But what I would say is that kind of proves the point that a finger spinner maybe isn't able to extract anything from some of these surfaces where a leggy is. And I think things are aligning to suggest that Matt Parkinson might well win his opportunity quite shortly. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, all I was going to say was I agree. And the good thing that Parkinson is getting at the minute, he's now bowling in an international attack. You've got Hassan Ali, you've got Saqib Mahmood and Jimmy Anderson. So from Parkinson's point of view, if he does get his chance to play at Lords or wherever throughout the summer, he's actually playing with international bowlers. So not only is his skill level going to be at a certain standard, he's actually fitting in and around bowlers of international class. So he knows he's got to bowl, you know, the areas he's bowling, the variations he's bowling, but when to attack and when to contain and when to hold because of the international class that he's in with. So I think that if I was selecting the England side, I'd be looking at that and how he goes about not just delivering his skill set, but also the mindset and how he goes about his daily work, fitting in with bowlers of international class. So that for me is a good tick in the box for Parkinson as well.
I think on top of that as well, when he's got lengths that Jack Leach certainly doesn't have at the moment, is runs on the board. And obviously he might not have that with England, but I think Parkinson, so what, last two games, lengths have wrapped up massive scores and won by an innings, or won by an innings and won by 10 wickets. And I guess certainly as a leggy, the benefit of that can't be underestimated. And just, I guess, the amount, just the opportunity to bowl and to be told to attack and to have men around the back, bat and all that kind of thing. Jack Leach, I mean, Somerset are struggling with the bat. And that was Tom Abel's first innings century was more runs combined than in his last 14 innings, I think it was. And then he got 50 in the second innings as well. But once again, their collapse in the second innings, it sort of let Surrey back in, was very much sort of emblematic of the way they'd be going with the bat for quite a while. But also at Surrey, at the Oval, they're playing on, it's not dead centre, it's not right on the side, but it certainly, as a captain, means you've got one short side to protect. And I think I don't know if this came into the thinking, but I think it maybe became harder to bowl Leach for 20, 25 overs straight as they might have done later in the summer on another ground, perhaps. But equally, I was at Canterbury on Thursday and they're playing right over on one side, and I think Hampshire picked Dawson, Crane and Felix Horgan. And, you know, Mason Crane has bowled far better in his life than he did over those 4 days. But once again, the benefit of runs on the board, as they had, I think, 650, and the benefit of playing an attack with guys like Kyle Abbott and Keith Barker, who certainly created a lot of rough, but also meant he could afford to attack, and they could afford to, I don't know, sort of see him leak runs and on the off chance that he would take two or three. He didn't, but I guess that, I think seeing teams pick a leg spinner in those circumstances, I think what we need to see more of. So yeah,
I'm not positive that Lord's surface, which is, you know, we talk about the race to Lord's, is going to be particularly helpful to any spinner. But, you know, Parkinson is learning to bowl on pitches which aren't massively helpful. I mean, again, I think Lancashire are a very well-run club. You know, they're producing players and they're producing the sort of pitches which I think we need to see to produce good players and players ready for England cricket. So he is getting used to doing those jobs. Look, I think I said before, the first time I saw him, I thought he was miles away. And every time I see him, he gets better. He's doing everything right. And it feels like we're on the brink of it happening.
I think the thing you've got with Lords is when DRS is in the game with a slope, you've always got to pick a spinner at Lords because they're always in the game, even though it's not turning. We are that front pad, the slope, everything that comes with it. You just make a slight mistake and they're in the spinner's in the game. To go on to it being sort of race to Lords and looking at, you know, the 2nd of June, you look at the team that finished the test team that finished in the Caribbean. Other than Craig Overton, there's nobody for me saying, pick me. There's a hell of a lot on the other side. And that's what we've said. We've said the competition for places for the England cricket team in the last 2 years has been very, very minimal. The pool of players in red ball cricket compared to the white ball cricket has been very, very minimal. You look at that team that played in the last test match in Grenada, to what options are potential coming in. There are a lot of people knocking on the door. And it's probably up to the selectors to whether to take a punt or not on whether the person that he's replacing is better or not. Because the ones that are playing county cricket at the minute, from the England the team that played in the third test match, other than Craig Overton, everybody else is really either not playing or had a real struggle. And there are young players knocking on the door. And whether they're ready or not, it might be new chance, new time, chuck them in. But I think the good thing about these first three rounds of county championship matches, there are a lot of young players knocking on the door now, which is good to see.
And to throw another curveball there as well, I think three or four of those guys from that Grenada team, so Dan Lawrence has got a hamstring problem, We've not seen Alex Lee since the big 180. Craig Overton was off the field a bit yesterday with a toe problem. Matt Fisher's out with a... what's Matt Fisher done? Back problem, I think. Guys are a bit further away. I think, you know, it may well be that, that come June, I guess, other names have been able to step into, you know, been able to sort of enter.
You've also got Stokes. Because... Stokes is going to be named captain, but you've also got his knee. Yeah. You know, you've also got his struggling knee. So we haven't seen any of that. So the race to Lourdes, what we have, it could be a very, very different looking 11 compared to Grenada to Lourdes. The one good thing about it is whoever they pick, they're picking form because there's a lot of good players and a lot of young players in form, which is good to see.
We don't even know who's picking, by the way.
Yeah, exactly, you know, yeah.
A few weeks ago, the coach was the main selector. We don't have a coach. So, yeah, I mean, I presume Rob Key will do it with advice from James Taylor and Ben Stokes. But this is going to be one of the issues, and it's a serious issue in my view, with having a foreign coach come straight in from outside. You know, Trevor Bayliss never had a chance to get to watch any county cricket. So he was very, very reliant on other opinions to pick sides. And he was so honest. You know, we would put names to him and he would say, Rory Burns, he had never seen bat until he turned up to play for England. So I don't think that's massively healthy. I appreciate we're in the position we are and it might be necessary to have a foreign test coach. It looks like that will happen. But that is a serious drawback.
Guys, I'm going to have to wrap this up because we've got matches to look ahead to and also questions to answer. So let's get on to the mailbag.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
The Mailbag.
Okay, so we've had a terrific response to the show and plenty of questions in as well. Random dog name on Twitter. It says, are Somerset, as the saying goes, too good to go down? Nick?
No, I don't think... I think it's a very competitive... I think Division 1 is very competitive, and I think having 10 teams in it means that there is more emphasis on... There is more emphasis than on just surviving relegation, as perhaps there was when it was 8 teams, and very, you know, very dog-eat-dog, but Somerset need to score runs. I mean, they're not too good at the moment is batting, and... I mean, if they can sort the batting out, they'll be fine. They'll compete at the top end because they've got a very good seam attack, and as the summer goes on, a very dangerous spinner, as we've seen with Jack Leach in the past, especially at Taunton. But no, you can't be in a situation where, you know, Tom Abel's, as I said earlier, Tom Abel's scoring 100 that is literally 14-fold in what he's done the last 14 innings. They've been very reliant on a few guys, though, haven't they? I mean, and if you don't score runs, you're not going to win many games, especially if you are playing on pretty good surfaces, which is what they have been doing for the first three rounds of the summer. So, no, absolutely not, I don't think. I think genuinely think it's going to be very competitive. You know, Northamptonshire have shown, with those two really hard-fought draws, that they were perhaps everyone's tip to struggle as sort of one of the promoted teams in 2019. But, they're not lying down. Likewise, Gloucester, who've lost two in a row against Yorkshire and Lancashire, they very nearly came away with a draw, having very nearly won their first game against Northants. So I think there are a lot of... I don't think anyone's too good to go down. I think it's going to be pretty close, to be honest.
This one's for you, George. At Tunnel King, Daniel King says, why do Warwickshire players never get talked about to the extent they deserve? And that's echoed by CB Chats. He says, Warwickshire won the championship but didn't get a single player in the team of the year. Why is it that Warwickshire don't get talked about along the same ways that that other counties do? Would you say that? I mean, obviously you do.
No, I wouldn't say that, to be honest. I didn't know about the team of the year. I don't know who picked that. Was Norwell not in it? That surprises me. But, I mean, they Stone, Wokes, Briggs was in the England squad last year. Sibley's been in and out of the side. I don't know. I think that's... A lot of counties are a wee bit paranoid about their own position and things. I think Warwickshire at this stage get a pretty good representation, pretty good coverage. I don't think I accept that. Just on Somerset, by the way, having seen them a couple of times, I think they'll be all right. I know they've lost seven in a row. It sounds like a ridiculous thing to say. And it is, to be fair, possible that morale will decline and then anything can happen. I accept that. But they don't look very far away from turning the corner to me. And if they can hold it together, I think they'll be all right. It's like Essex just lost a game by 10 wickets. They've got nothing to worry about. They're a good side, good club in lots of ways. I think there might be some stuff that comes out in the next few days about the disciplinary stuff, but that isn't anything to do with the team, really. Sometimes you just lose, and that Somerset side, you know, they weren't that far from victory against Surrey, were they, really?
No, they were good third evening. They were good third evening away from not really being able to lose.
I'm with you.
I do think... that wasn't to say I think they'll go down. That was just to say that
if you don't score
runs... you will struggle.
Oh no, you're dead right, Nick, as ever, really. Nottinghamshire in Division 2, you know, they're an incredibly strong side, so of course you can go down. And Yorkshire went down the year after winning the championship, didn't they? Well, several teams have done that, so these things can certainly happen. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in on the first question as well.
No, it absolutely works for me. Here's one for you then, Harmy. Why wasn't Rob Yates picked for the West Indies tour? And is he likely to be in consideration for the summer test? That's from James Whiteley on Twitter. He looked to me to be the next cab off the rank rather than Alex Leese prior to that West Indies tour.
I think they just went for experience at the top of the order. I think Alex Leese's career, a bit like the David Milan. You took David, if David Milan had went to the West Indies, they might have took a more inexperienced opener, a younger opener, a Yates or a Haynes. But I think with no Milan in there, Root going up to three and having another inexperienced player at the top, Leeds is inexperienced in test terms, but age-wise, character-wise, solid character, I just think they might have gone right. That's why they've gone with Alex Leeds. I don't think there was a right or wrong option at the top of the order. They could have gone with two or three other players. I just thought the final decision, the final tick in the box might have been... He's 28-year-old. He's been around the block a bit. He understands his game. Why put a young player at the mercy of what has been a very, very difficult winter? We'll go with experience. And this comes back to my point. The biggest thing, one of the biggest things Keezy has to get right is bridging the gap between first-class cricket and test match cricket. The overseas trips in between, in the winters, in our winters, we get back to going then, because if you look at the team of the week every single week for the first three rounds of the county championships, they'll probably be on an air tour next year. And if they can bridge the gap of playing better players overseas experiences, then they've got a better chance when it comes to test match cricket. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've had a real, real struggle of late, because we haven't had that gap. We haven't had that gap being built, bridged. And I think that's why Yates and Haynes, Bahanan, one or two others will benefit from the full season of county cricket, going on an air tour and being ready for the next summer and throwing their hat in the ring. Not to say that they're not going to get picked this year, but I think that's what will help. And I think that's why Lee's got picked over a Haynes or a Yates, just that little bit more experience because he's 28-year-old and he's been around the block a bit.
Yeah, just on that, he is at uni still, Rob Yates. He's at uni and he's had basically one season. I mean, he is an impressive guy. I think don't think anyone made more centuries than him last year, but he went on the Lions so that they could take a look at him. He doesn't know the players he would have been playing with. I think it would have been a big ask and possibly damaged his long-term development. You've got to be a bit worried about that. Maybe this sounds terribly cautious. The one thing I've noticed, though, they've moved him down to number three at Warwickshire. Surprises me. I'm not saying it's wrong at all. The logic was actually very good, but he made all his centuries as an opener and he wanted to stay as an opener. So that's something just to keep an eye on. Just, you know, I thought was interesting. Mm.
I think the Haynes example is very close, isn't it, as well? Like, the two guys who've had one big year, and if they can replicate it, then probably have a healthier case, perhaps, than... I think Rob Yates passed 11 times last season and made 500s, which is great, but I know you don't play the game, you know, you don't take those 500s out of it, but it's still a very small sample size you're putting.
No, it's a fair observation. John, had you read the piece I wrote about Dom Sibley? He's one of the interesting players who's out of contract at the end of the season, and he's been offered a new contract at Warwickshire and he hasn't signed it. Now, I don't think that's anything particularly dramatic about that. I think he wants to play T20 cricket, why wouldn't he? And that looks difficult for him at Warwickshire. It's a struggle to see how he fits in that side, but, you know, he is from Surrey. He's gone back to working with Neil Stewart, the renowned Surrey batting coach. I think he's got a girlfriend who lives in London. You know, Surrey haven't made an approach. I'm absolutely not saying they have. I don't think you're allowed to until June the 1st. But if I were a betting man, a lot of people tend to go back to Surrey, don't they? It's a great club, completely understandable, but we'll see.
We will see. You know, it surprised a few when he moved away from Surrey, of course. He certainly backed himself, hasn't he, Sibley? Ollie, this will be the last. This won't be a question. We're going to wrap things up. But he has basically said what you guys have said in answer to that question about Rob Yates. Very young and has only had one good year. Overall average is 30, despite the amount of hundreds he gets. One for the future, but not in the top five openers in the country as it stands, in my honest opinion. Really talented, though. So, sorry we couldn't get to all of your questions. There was just too many. But I think some of the tweets that came through, those questions that I didn't ask the guys, kind of answered them throughout Moments of the Week and also the Top Lines and Race to Lords. So get them in again, and we will do our best to answer them as part of the mailbag.
Match of the Week.
OK, guys, all 18 counties in action. Thursday through to Sunday. Division 1 sees Essex against Northants, Gloucestershire, Surrey, Hampshire versus Lancashire, that must be the match of the week, Somerset against Warwickshire and Yorkshire versus Kent. Yorkshire's first game at Headingley since you know what as well. So there's plenty of stories in and around there. Let's start with you, Harmy. Which of those fixtures really stands out and what are you looking forward to the most from those five matches in Division 1?
Yeah, Yorkshire-Kent. That's it, top and bottom. For me, that's the match of the week because it's the first game the Yorkshire faithful are going to give a chance to go back through the gates of Headingley and either have their sort of stamp and approval of what's happening now and moving forward and trying to rebuild the trust between, you know, the community and the club, or it goes the other way and there's still a little bit of an animosity. So I'm sure there'll be some anxious waits for Darren and for, you know, Lord Patel, but fingers crossed that, you know, the Yorkshire bandwagon is moving in the right direction and the Yorkshire fans will come in their hundreds and thousands to support the club going forward. And that for me is the game of the week. I know that's off the field. On the field, yes, Hampshire Lancashire. Again, we've seen Hampshire get 600. Again, they get 600 against an international attack of, is Anderson going to play back-to-back games? Mahmood, Parkinson. See how Parkinson goes against a very, very good batting unit who are in form. So, yeah, that's the on-the-field one, but off-the-field one, it'll definitely be what happens at Headingley. I'll be watching on Thursday morning.
Are you going to be at a game this week, George? You've got a little celebration coming up.
I don't know about a celebration, but I am taking some time off, yes.
So no county cricket for you, yes.
And a large one.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Hampshire versus Lancashire, though, eh? I mean, that must be the match of the week, surely, from a cricketing perspective.
Yeah, it's been what's the word I'm looking for? It's been an encouraging start to the season because you look around and actually there have been some really high quality contests. And this is, yeah, a really good example. So I've no idea which way it's going to go, but, Division 1 looks really, really strong. I mean, you've got a side as strong as Notts in Division 2. That's kind of encouraging too. So I hope it's played on a really good pitch and I hope we see the leggies in operation. I think that would be really interesting, and I hope it's a high scoring encounter, basically on the sort of test quality wicket. And those are the sort of encounters where you can start to make some sensible selection decisions ahead of a test series. You know, I think we talked last week about what you read into Craig Overton's 13 for 87 or whatever it was. And I don't know the answer, but I think that if you're seeing two really good quality sides on a sort of test quality wicket, then you can begin to make some really informed decisions, can't you?
And Nick, I mean, one of the, to further on from George's point, really, if you were to look at the teams that you'd say would be, you know, contesting the bottom positions in the table, North Ants, you know, they batted out a draw and they batted a long time against Yorkshire last week. Gloucestershire, of course, have been your guys' tips to actually impress this season, and they came within four overs of batting out a draw. I mean, Somerset we've talked about a little bit, but even Kent, you know, Compton's continuing his ridiculous run. Daniel Bell Drummond has scored a big century last week as well. So it does show the strength in depth, really.
I understand. I mean, put it this way. I mean, on North Ants, so North Ants are back at Chelmsford for the first time since they lost in a day and half an hour last September. They batted longer against Yorkshire to save the game last week than that game lasted. So that is a good sign, I guess you'd say.
For their
survival hopes. And for their season, I think Will Young, top of the order, having an international opener definitely helps, especially given that Ricardo Vasconcelos, the young captain, just starting out and opened the batting as well, a lot on his plate. To have someone who knows what the, you know, who's done it at the top level, can only help. I was at Canterbury last week watching Compton, and I only saw him make 27, I think, of 103. But well, actually, what was interesting is that he's sort of realised during the course of that day that he's the same age, I think, a few months older than Daniel Bell Drummond, who made 149 rather. You know, he's one of those guys who was touted for England for years, wasn't he? And it was by Rob Key, actually, among others. Won the Wisden Schools Cricket of the Year back in the day, I think, you know, and which was also won by Butler and Bairstow and James Taylor and those guys. But they're the same age, and Daniel Bell Drummond is, you know, club vice-captain, playing his 343rd game, I think it was. Then you've got Ben Compton, who sort of had to fight his way to that point. And I don't think you can ever call a Compton an outlier in the game or an outsider in the game, but I think you can certainly admire, you know, I think the willpower more than anything to, you know, I've spoken to enough guys who've trialled and have done twos cricket and have done the circuit and feel like they've missed the boat. And, you know, fair play for keeping going, I guess. And actually, I think it's quite a pertinent thing in the context of what we were saying earlier about Robbie Yates and guys like that, who there's such a clamour for them when they're so young to be thrown in. Guys develop at different points and hit their peak at different points. And, you know, it might not work for someone at 21, it might be too young for them. They might fall out of the system at 21, 22, whatever. But to have a guy at the top of the run scoring stakes who's 28 years old and has had to go via county second team cricket, two or three different counties. I think he was playing in the Zimbabwe in first class cricket back in January and February. I think that's quite heartening to see, just on a purely human level as much as anything. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he goes at Yorkshire, because I mean, he'll be playing a very good attack, and I'm not sure he's faced anything as quick as Harris Ralph yet. I might have that wrong in this season. But yeah, as with Harvey and George, I've been looking at Kent at Yorkshire more than anything else. But of course, Lancashire, Hampshire was the title side last season, wasn't it? So up at Liverpool, hopefully played on a very different surface that did create a great game but was quite low scoring. But I think that they are the two standouts, certainly.
And what about Division 2 for you, Harmy? Nottinghamshire, Worcestershire, that should be pretty entertaining, actually. Derbyshire against Glamorgan, so we'll see if Shan Massou can continue his fantastic April. And Sussex against your team, Durham. Middlesex against Leicestershire. Where's your attention going to be, aside from how Durham are doing?
Yeah, Durham will be obviously trying their hardest to get rid of Pujara. He seems to be the one that's going to hold that group together. Not Broad. Is Broad going to play against Worcester? And Worcester, what did they rack up? 491 last week against it'd be interesting to see how they go. Brett D'Oliveira, he got 107 or 169. It'd be interesting to see how they go against the very, very good, what will be a very, very good Notts attack. I think it'd be interesting to see who Notts leave out, because they'll have a bit of a selection dilemma to get one of the greatest bowlers of all time into their group, because they bowled Durham out for 230 and 117. So that'll be interesting to see how they go. But that, for me, is the game of the the second division, and hopefully Durham can go down to the south coast and beat Sussex, because you know it's a bit of a disappointing week for Durham last week if they want to have any aspirations of going up, because Derbyshire look as though they've got runs in them, Notts look very, very strong, Middlesex have got a bowling attack that will get 20 wickets everywhere, so and they look as though they've got a good side as well, Middlesex. So as well as we've talked up the first division, there's about four or five strong candidates to go up and hold their own in that second division. And Durham are probably just hanging on the shirt tails of that.
Okay, time is against us, so let's head to One to Watch.
One to Watch.
Okay, so at the start of the season, we all picked one player that we were going to follow the fortunes of. And once again, it's Harmy's man who's really standing out. Matt Potts with 6 for 107 against Nottinghamshire, Harmy. Although, of course, in a losing course. And Nottinghamshire, no, it wasn't against Nottinghamshire. Who was it against?
Yeah, Nottinghamshire.
That's right. They only batted once, didn't they? Is that right?
Bowled nicely, bowled lively. Looked as though he had a decent bit of pace up. And he bowled straight. That's the thing I like about the guy. He's quite tall. He's not, you know, hugely tall. He's about 6'2", 6'3". But he hits the deck quite hard. Brings the stumps into play a lot. And that's what I like about him, especially at Chester Street. Him and Ben Rain got 9 wickets between them. But Slater was just too good for him. But it was good to see that, again, he's continuing with the wickets. What's that now? He's got 16 championship wickets. So, like I said before, when I said last week, if you get Bryden Cass back into that group, you know, Durham will have a bowling attack that can challenge to trying to get them pushed up the league. But again, like we've talked about, George talked about and Nick talked about earlier, if you can't get runs on the board, no matter how many good bowlers you've got, you're not going to win games.
Ed Pollock weighed in with a few runs. Nick, would have been pleased to have seen that.
No, I was pleased. I was pleased with the manner of them as with the number of them. And obviously, Ed Pollock's name, I think, until this year was solely white ball linked, because he'd never played a county championship game in 6 years at Warwick. And actually, I think fair play to him for going to Worcester and playing his way. I think he'd spoken to a lot of bowlers who all said to him, don't change what you do. You know, what I think what the gist very much being that what's made him, you know, sort of pretty successful in the white ball stuff has been that if you miss, he's just going to haul you over to the next side. But he was out at 12:30 for 77 on the first morning off 70 odd balls. He made 112 ball ton on his debut for the county. So yeah, I quite liked seeing that as much as the number of runs, just, you know, a guy sort of backing his ability, and a bit like Ryan Patel's done it, sorry, you know, sort of realising that he's got the game to go, and you know, if it's there to be hit, to hit it. And yeah, you know, it always come off, but while I think I said in the first episode that it'd be intriguing to watch IFAs and Red Bull cricket, and 200 runs in 2 games isn't bad.
Mason Crane did get a bowl this week, didn't take a wicket though in 2 innings, George, but you
I'm
know,
just glad he
go.
Played I'm just glad he
say.
Played
exactly.
I think he took 0 for 100, didn't he, and went, you know, almost 4 and over or something, but he'll have better games. I just think the relevance is that you got 2 decent leggies playing. You couldn't exaggerate. We're almost the same age. I don't want to do you a disservice, John, but I didn't see a leggy. I didn't see an English leggy until I was probably 30. I kid you not. Or Kim Barnett bowled a bit. But Abdul Qadir, when he first appeared, I mean, that's why I loved Pakistan so much. There was such a sort of magical, fun side to watch. And Abdul Qadir was... and then Shane Warne appears and people started to copy him, in particular Shane Warne. But I see Mason Crane as a sort of barometer cricketer, that if he's playing, it probably says something about the pitches, and it probably says something about the way he's going to be captained, because you probably have to expect that leggies are not going to provide, generally, Shane Warne apart, quite the same level of control as you might get from a Jack Leach. So I'm delighted he played, and you know, I hope he continues to play. And you know, don't judge him on those figures; he's a lot better than that. But yeah, he's fallen behind Matt Parkinson at the moment. But that's not the big picture, really.
There's been one county championship 10-for by a leg spinner in the last decade.
And that was Mason, presumably, was it?
No, it was Luke Holman, actually, in Middlesex at Sussex last year.
Oh wow!
But before that was Adil Rashid back in 2011, which
great speaks stat.
To how. Yeah, as I guess to everything you've just said there, but
The second English Legia, so it was probably Athers. Because Athers had a season where... Well, no, but you laugh, but he was a good bowler for a while.
Yeah.
He had a season where he took something like 48 first-class wickets, maybe 45, something like that. And at that stage, you're thinking, he's really going to develop into an all-rounder. I know that kind of sounds silly in retrospect, but he just had a bad back. You know, he's got a rubbish back. But I'm pretty sure he took almost 50 wickets in a season early in his career bowling leggies, which that was unheard of at the time, I think.
Well, look, we've just finished strongly. That's all I'll say. Nick Friend pulling out the stat. Leave the best right. till last. doesn't matter. I'm going to go and check that Mike Atherton thing as well. My man Dustin Melton didn't play. Well, he did play it. He played in the seconds. Pick up one for 59. I hope he does play. He's got a wonderful story. Guys, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for listening or watching. Following on, County Cricketer. If you got this far on YouTube, then please subscribe, review, leave a question. And if you got this far on the Following On podcast, then we'll do the same, really. And we'll be back following week 4. George won't be with us, so it'll be myself, Harmy, and Nick looking back at all the action from week 4. Big happy birthday to George. And thanks for watching or listening.
Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at @cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.